Welcome to the latest edition of Wax Ecstatic. I'm your host, Matt Salmon. Thank you so much for joining us once again as we continue to rummage through the monster box of baseball cards here from primarily the 1980s, going year by year, set by set, and we've moved on to 1985. 1984 was a great year for card collectors, baseball fans, and people in general. Well, 85, just as good for all three parties, and we'll take a look at our first 1985 set. It is Donruss, and our random pull, a rated rookie. And like I said about 84 Donruss, the debut of the rated rookie cards, a lot more misses than hits. Doug Loman, an outfielder for the Milwaukee Brewers. This is card number 46 of the 85 Donruss set. We will be taking a look at that set and also the rather interesting turn of events in Doug Loman's life. Now, he didn't succeed much on the ball field, but he has been, he's been answering to a higher power since then. We'll give you all the details on that in just a moment. But first, we'll get some listener reaction from our Twitter feed. You can follow us on Twitter at Wax and Gum Stains. Again, at Wax and Gum Stains. Invite a friend, tell them about the podcast, tell them about our Twitter feed, as we've got some very interesting things that get discussed when we're not promoting our podcast every Tuesday and Friday. And we had some very interesting things come across our Twitter feed the last couple of days. Before we do that, I want to mention there is a player who's going to be making his major league debut. Actually, he gets the call up today by the Boston Red Sox. Yes, Yoan Moncada, the top prospect in the Boston Red Sox system, depending who you ask, could be the number one prospect in all of Major League Baseball. And why do I bring up Yoan Moncada in this podcast about 30-plus-year-old baseball cards? Because Moncada, if you didn't listen to our 84 Fleer podcast a couple podcasts ago, Moncada was scouted by Ed Romero Jr. a few years ago in Florida. Of course, the son of Ed Romero Sr., the longtime utility everyman, infielder, outfielder, everything but pitcher and catcher, which we featured in the 84 Fleer podcast. So rather timely that Yoan Moncada was going to be making his major league debut, making his September call-up appearance with the Boston Red Sox shortly after we were talking about former Red Sox and 84 Fleer's Guy Smiley, Ed Romero Sr. Now let's get to the Wax Ecstatic Twitter feed again at Wax and Gum Stains. A very interesting comment regarding our 1984 Tops podcast, which came out this past Tuesday, from our good friend Alex Hyde. Alex is the guy who admitted several podcasts ago that he once traded two Willie McGee cards for a Ryan Sandberg rookie card, a Tops card. That is, he traded the Sandberg card for a McGee card, not once, but twice. So he's got the complete Willie McGee collection, although at a far lower value than if he hung on to the Sandberg rookies. Anyways, Alex, commenting on our 84 Tops podcast, says, "Strangely enough, I remember opening a fresh wax pack back in 84 to find cards with tiny post-it notes affixed to them." And we had a little back and forth. A couple other listeners chimed in as well. And this was a very interesting thing. I don't think anybody has ever opened up a factory fresh pack and have found post-it notes on every card within the pack. And Alex was nice enough to post a picture of some of the cards. Let's see, Lee Mazzilli, Dan Ford, Steve Boros, and Billy Martin. The post-it notes are all gone, but you can still see the adhesive. And again, if you follow at Wax and Gum Stains on Twitter, you can see this exchange from a couple days ago. I don't know what the answer is, Alex, and I'm looking into it. I do have a connection at Tops. I've sent a picture of the cards that you posted and just some general questions about it. I'm wondering if this was just some weird, freakish factory issue, you know, something got miscut and, you know, maybe a post-it note fell into the card cutter and it just got sliced and diced with the card sheet and ended up in the pack. Who knows? Maybe there's, you know, obviously there's more than four cards on a sheet of cards. So maybe there were a few other packs out there with those mysterious post-it notes on it. But I'm asking my connection at Tops, has he ever heard of something like this? And if so, what could have done it? So who knows? Maybe somebody has an answer. And if I can get that answer for you, Alex, I will pass it on to you and our listeners. Also got a nice little note here from Ryan Stonebreaker. Just started listening to your podcast. Pretty cool. I enjoyed it very much. Keep it rolling on. Will do, Ryan. I appreciate the kind thoughts. And in case you're new to the podcast, we do post them every Tuesday and Friday. At least that is our goal. My day job and night job, in fact, most of my life centers around my job, being the director of broadcasting for the Tampa Bay Lightning, and hockey season's just around the corner. So there's that odd chance that I won't be able to post a podcast for various reasons, but obviously if that's the case, I'll let you know. I have received several tweets, several direct messages over the last few weeks, message board messages as well, thanks to our friends at Freedom Cardboard. A lot of people love the podcast. I'm glad you like it. Trust me, when you do a podcast, any podcast, and especially when you're doing one that is for something very niche, you know, for those of us who are collecting or have collected at some point in our lives, you know, it's a very small but diehard group of people who are involved in this hobby. So you turn on the microphone, you press record, you start talking, you're wondering, is anybody even listening to this? So it's great to get feedback, A, that you are listening to it, and B, that you're enjoying it. And finally, let's check in with Fastball John. InStream Sports is the Twitter handle, but Fastball John, in a tweet promoting this podcast, the 85 Donruss set, John says, quote unquote, paper gold is what the neighborhood card dealer called them upon initial release. And that's very interesting, because when you look at 85 Donruss, gold is not the color that you normally associate with 85 Donruss. Although I will say gold is part of the color scheme, but with 85 Donruss, you typically talk about black because it is a black bordered card, which makes it a little more valuable, a little harder to find in pristine condition, and one of the many reasons why 85 Donruss is such a memorable set. Although for some collectors, it may be frustratingly memorable because it's hard to get those gem mint cards with the black borders. So we'll talk about that. Thank you very much, Fastball John. We'll talk about that in a moment after I remind you that you can not only follow us on Twitter at Wax and Gum Stains, but we encourage you to interact as well. If you have any questions, comments, thoughts, anything about the podcast that we do about baseball card collecting in general, you're more than welcome to chime in on Twitter again at Wax and Gum Stains. All right, let's take a look at our card and our random pull for this week. It is 85 Donruss. Again, card number 46, Doug Loman. First, we're going to talk about the 1985 Donruss set. Then we'll talk about Doug Loman's career and life after baseball. As we take a look at the 85 Donruss set here, as Fastball John mentioned, it was paper gold in the eyes of many. And not just because gold was part of the color scheme, primarily on the back of the card, but because the card had a black border, that instantly rose the value of the cards to a point where you really had to search for gem mint cards. And of course, this being 1985, not everybody who was buying these cards was putting them in, you know, plastic pages or top loaders or specially designed baseball card boxes. They were still ending up in shoe boxes. They still had rubber bands on them. They were still sitting on a pile in a bedroom floor just before everybody, as soon as they opened a pack, started putting their cards in hermetically sealed envelopes and pages and top loaders and bolting them down to make sure that they were in mint condition forever. So it's very hard to track down a completely mint 85 Donruss set. It is entirely hard or very hard to track down some of the key cards from the set in mint condition, again, because of the black border. And there are some very good cards in this set here. The key rookies are Roger Clemens and Kirby Puckett. Again, Fleer got the scoop on both Donruss and Topps with the Fleer update set. So that was their first rookie cards, but in terms of Donruss, Clemens, and Puckett making their rookie card debut here. Some other noticeable rookies included in the set, Jimmy Key. Of course, I say that not only because I was a Blue Jay fan growing up, but he had a pretty decent career. Eric Davis, also Oral Hershiser, Brett Saberhagen, Dwight Gooden. Topps had the scoop on Fleer and Donruss. They had Doc Gooden's card, his rookie card, in the regular, the base set of 1984 top set. So Donruss a little late to the game there, but they had him in the 85 set. And also very strange error and variation card, Tom Seaver, who in 1985 would pick up his 300th career win, then with the Chicago White Sox. For some reason, the initial run of Tom Seaver cards featured Floyd Bannister, who, first of all, doesn't look like Tom Seaver. Second, certainly didn't pitch like Tom Seaver. Third, he was a lefty. Tom Seaver was a righty. So the error and variation cards are interesting. I believe the error is priced more than the variation, or the corrected version, I should say. The 85 set, not only because of the black borders being very sensitive and some of the key rookie cards, and again, some of the error cards that were featured in there as well, made it a very scarce set. So it's a little difficult to find now. And when I was a kid, again, I started collecting in 1989, so this is a few years after this particular set was released, because of the key rookie cards, because of the scarcity to begin with, I didn't really get my hands on too many of these cards. I may have bought one pack in my life and maybe collected a few of the other cards through other methods. But I, much like 83 Fleer, I only have a handful of 85 Donruss cards. And that is partially explaining why Doug Loman was our pick. So let's take a look at the Doug Loman card. As you can see on the front, that beautiful black border, but as was the main complaint with that set, you look around the lower right or lower left-hand side, the bottom edge of the card there. It was certainly not in bad condition, but you can see there's just a little bit of white cardstock poking out here and there. As years of shuffling around in this monster box, just took a little bit of the black off of the edge there. So that is one of the main complaints about the set. But other than the condition not necessarily being mint right out of the pack, depending on how it was handled, you have to say the card looks really, really nice. You not only have that black border, but also you have these five red stripes at the bottom of the card. And this reminds me, this is such a 1985 look. I've referred to this card as the Knight Rider card because the red stripes remind me of Kit, David Hasselhoff, or Michael Knight's car, had that little red light that went back and forth, which I think was supposed to be its mouth. It was the grill, and it was just this little red light that just kind of went back and forth at the front of the car. That's what it reminds me of. And if you were alive in 1985 and remember much of anything, the red stripes on black background could also, well, it could represent the A-Team or Spencer for Hire. That's incredible. You know, you could almost see John Davidson and his big bushy toupee on a card like this. There's a very 1985 action adventure network television show look to the Donruss set. Now, despite that, the rest of the card looks great. You've got about 90% of the front of the card, maybe even 95% dedicated to the photograph of the player, the player's name in a small stripe at the bottom, his position. No mention of the logo or the team name, I should say, on the rated rookie cards, but throughout other cards, you would see team logos. But, you know, the rated rookie card took over the team logo. That wasn't always the case with Donruss rated rookies. But in the case of Doug Loman, that was the case. So normally where you see the rated rookie logo, that's where you would see in Doug Loman's case, a Milwaukee Brewers logo. Again, one of my favorites from that era, the ball and glove logo. Not as good as Ed Romero or Larry Heisel, as we saw before, because back then they had the blue and yellow hats. Well, here Loman sporting just the navy blue hat. but still looks pretty sharp after all these years. The Donruss logo D85, prominent in the upper left-hand corner. Flip the card over, you'll see the format for Donruss baseball cards through 1991 right here. They made one significant change in the back of the card between 84 and 85, and that is instead of having the color of the back of the card go from one color selection on top of a predominantly white background, Donruss just went with a solid color for the background. Now, the stats were within a white text box, if you will, if we're going to use a computer term for it or a Microsoft Word term for it. But this look would stay consistent through 1991. Like I said, basically, you had one color back there, you have the card number inside of a baseball in the upper left-hand corner, player's name, personal stats going across the top, the recent major league performance, again, Donruss not going more than 5 years back in a player's career, and then as space would allow, information, for example, contract status, you know, how acquired, career highlights, maybe some interesting trivial tidbit. The 85 Donruss card, very sharp looking. Like I said, it had that action adventure network TV show look to it. A very serious looking card for Donruss. This may be the first serious look. I'm not going to call it a business look. Fleer certainly had that nailed down throughout the 80s. But a very serious look for Donruss. And it worked. Again, with the black borders, it's very striking. Reminded a lot of people of the 71 top set, which is not only hard to find in pristine condition, but also just beautiful to look at. Even if the players weren't the best or the, you know, the teams they were on weren't that good, or even if the photography wasn't that great, something about a black bordered card just really stands out. And Donruss was able to hit one out of the park here with that. And again, just flipping it over on the back, very clean, very simple. You've got this light gold color for the background. You've got the recent major league performance and the beginning of a very long trend for Donruss going with this style of a card back for many, many years. All right, now let's talk about Doug Loman, as it's a very interesting story here. And to be honest with you, even though I love pulling cards that happen to be stars, or maybe they were big rookies, or maybe they had one shining moment in baseball history, like even Andy Hawkins, you know, having that weird no-hitter disallowed, well, happening in the first place and then stricken from the record books, or Ron Kittle, you know, we talked about him a few podcasts ago. There's something very special about, you know, the common card or the average ball player. We found the interesting angle to Ed Romero, and now it links up to today with his son and a prize talent that was scouted, making his debut for the Boston Red Sox now, and Yoan Moncada. Well, Doug Loman has a very interesting story, too. Doug was unfortunately branded a rated rookie. And as I mentioned a few podcasts ago, the rated rookie, it wasn't really a set. It was just kind of it wasn't even an insert or a subset. It was just part of the base set. Donruss would select about 20 players that they determined to be rated rookies that year. And as I've said before, they really swung and missed on a lot of rated rookies. Now, there are some notable ones over the years. And in fact, in 86, they would hit one out of the park with Jose Canseco. But in 85, the complete rated rookies collection, you had two rated rookies that actually had pretty decent careers. One was Danny Tartable. The other was Sean Dunston. Now, if Sean Dunston is one of your top rated rookies, top two rated rookies, then you know it's a bit of a stretch there. If that's one of your top guys, you know the pool was a little thin that particular year. And that's not to knock all of the rated rookies in the 85 set. In fact, you look through the checklist, you have guys like Steve Lyons, Darryl Boston, Larry Sheets, Calvin Schiraldi, Billy Hatcher, you know, guys who actually had some lengthy careers, maybe not spectacular, but they were able to hang around the big leagues for a little while. But for the most part, the 85 rated rookies were just not a very good collection. And unfortunately, Doug Loman gets lumped into this because this is a guy who actually showed a lot of potential. Coming out of Bakersfield, California, he was drafted by the Brewers in the second round of the 1978 amateur draft, the January draft. This is back when they had two amateur drafts. And he was making his rise up throughout the Brewers farm system and really found a home in Vancouver. That was their AAA farm club, the Vancouver Canadiens, for many, many years. And really, he stuck there in 1982 at the age of 84, and you could see his career improving. He had a 258 batting average, 14 home runs, 64 RBI. Well, the next year, he plays in 130 games, 262 average, 19 home runs, 78 RBI. And then he really hits the jackpot in 1984, 142 games, 324 batting average, 18 home runs, 102 RBI. He had an on-base percentage of .392, so his OPS .919. And he had a cup of coffee with the Brewers in 84, as you can see on the back of this Donruss card, number 46 from the 1985 set. He appeared in 23 games. Batted .276, two home runs, 12 RBI, .402 on base percentage, an OPS of .810. This, at the time, was not much of a stretch for Donruss to say, you know, this guy may have a career here. But then something strange happened. He makes the team out of training camp, out of spring training in 1985, but for whatever reason just can't find that magic. Plays only 24 games, hits .212, zero home runs, seven RBI, on-base percentage of .221, an OPS of .539. Strangely, he's striking out left and right, as he had 66 at-bats, struck out 12 times, far higher of a ratio of strikeouts to at-bats than anything that he had in Vancouver. So the Brewers moved him back down to Vancouver. And he finished out the season there, 104 games, .294 batting average, 10 home runs, 66 RBI, and a slugging percentage of .462, an OPS of .830. So he kind of found his magic once again in Vancouver at the tail end of 1985. Unfortunately for Lohman, he was a casualty of the numbers. The Brewers had quite a few outfielders, plenty talented, not great veterans. Of course, Robin Yount is the exception there. He had moved out to the outfield by then. But there's just a logjam of outfielders. And maybe they just weren't feeling that they needed to give this guy, you know, Lohman at the time was 27, another chance. I would imagine that the Brewers organization tagged him as a 4A player. And if you don't know what that is, kind of derogatory. It's suggesting that there's a player that's good enough to be great at AAA, but not good enough to stick in the major leagues, hence the 4A tag. It's like you're always on the fence, you're always on that bubble. You're great in the minor leagues, but just can't swing it in the major leagues. And Lohman was released in September of 85 at the end of the Vancouver Canadiens season. He went overseas to Japan, played 1 year in the Japanese league, actually did fairly well, hit .291, 14 home runs, 75 RBI, slugging percentage of .5453, excuse me, and an OPS of .790. And this guy was a pretty good outfielder, had a pretty good fielding percentage, nothing really standing out. Certainly later on in his career, he had a share of errors and mistakes early in his career, but you know, what player didn't? I mean, didn't Derek Jeter have like 53 errors in Tampa in 94? So, I mean, it, you know, everyone has their lumps to deal with early on in their career. But this was a guy who was a promising, serviceable outfielder. I don't know if you'd necessarily pencil him into the starting lineup, but this was a guy who you would think would stick around in the major leagues at least for a few years, be a journeyman, maybe a pinch hitter specialist or a defensive replacement specialist. But for whatever reason, it didn't happen for Doug Lohman. 1 year in Japan in 1986, and like that, he was gone. In the realm of Major League Baseball, this is the end of the Doug Lohman story. But for those of us who dig around, we know that typically it doesn't just end here. People don't just vanish off the face of the earth when their big league careers end. In fact, you could say that Doug Lohman got the ultimate promotion. No longer answering to somebody at a major league level, but answering to the ultimate umpire in the sky, that would be God. Yes, Doug Lohman is a pastor now, has been for many, many years. He has a church in Las Vegas. And what's interesting is if you type VegasPastor.com into your web browser, you will be directed to Doug Lohman's page. Actually, his whole website. It's got several pages on it. So if you happen to be in Vegas and you want to get married, but getting married by the guy dressing up as Elvis is just a little too cheap for you, well, say hello to Doug Lohman. His weddings, this is according to his website, his weddings have been featured on TLC's Say Yes to the Dress and Beautiful Bride magazine. He does intimate backyard ceremonies to elaborate venue events. And there's some other bullet points here about being professional, easy to talk with, flexible and accommodating, and funny. If you spend most of your early career riding the bus in the minor leagues and flop in the major leagues for some strange reason, you have to have a good sense of humor. And what's also interesting, if you go to the About page at VegasPastor.com and scroll down, what is featured at the bottom of the page? Card number 46 of the 1985 Donruss set, featuring rated rookie Doug Lohman of the Milwaukee Brewers. How's that for a happy ending? So even though Doug Lohman was not able to make it in the major leagues, even though he had a pretty successful minor league career, he is now getting people hitched in Vegas and also making some appearances on national television and some pretty big wedding magazines around the nation. So good for him. If you're not fortunate enough to stick around in the big leagues, may you be blessed enough to bless others. That's a great finish for Doug Lohman, the subject of our random poll from the limited number of 1985 Donruss cards that I have. And much like the 83 Fleer, 84 Fleer as well, I just couldn't get my hands on them. I started collecting a few years afterwards because of the rookies, because of the condition issues. The prices were just too high for me. When I started collecting, I had to collect cheap. I had to buy. I've got plenty of 88 tops somewhere. But 85 Donruss was a little hard for me to find. But if you are somebody who doesn't mind the potential of having that perfect card be deemed less than perfect because the black border is scraping off just a little bit, this is your set. This is a set when I was younger, I didn't really much care for, but the more I've looked at it, the more I've looked into the cards, the more I've grown to like it. And if you're looking for a pristine set, well, good luck with that. Most people tell you, go out and buy a factory set, but I've read some reports that even some of the cases from the factory got dinged up a little bit or manhandled through the mail or, you know, being shipped around from one warehouse to the other over the last 30 years. And even buying a factory set, you're not guaranteed a gem mint set. So it's a little hard to find that gem mint card in the 85 Donruss set, but it's a great card to look at. Like I said, it's got a very distinct 1985 look to it, a very serious look for Donruss. And even Doug Lohman looks pretty serious on this card here, although certainly he found some levity in a different form shortly after his Major League career crashed and burned just a couple of years after this card was released. So there are your thoughts, or my thoughts. I don't know about your thoughts. We'll get to that in a minute. There are my thoughts about the 85 Donruss set. A serious set, but a really beautiful set to seek out. Good luck finding it in gem mint condition, but if not, enjoy the cards that are there. There are some good rookies, some big young rising stars from the early 80s there, and even the common guys like Doug Lohman and pretty much the rest of the rated rookies in that set look pretty good even all these years later. So what are your thoughts about the 85 Donruss set or the story of Doug Lohman or anything? Feel free to chime in again on Twitter at Wax and Gumstains. Again, that's our handle at Wax and Gumstains. And make sure you join us for our next podcast scheduled to arrive on Tuesday as we talk about not serious, but back to business, the 85 Fleer set. We'll take a look at that set and pull a random card, again, from a limited amount here in this monster box, but it'll be something fun to talk about, I can guarantee it. I'm Matt Salmon, your host of Wax Ecstatic. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.